Now I have a quorum. Thank you. Roll call, please. Trust me. Mel Wilson is here. But we're going to go ahead and begin because I know Mel's here. I've been talking to him in the back, so let's start with the reports. Mr. Murthy?
Good morning. Can you put that on? I'm sorry. Good morning again. We're going to start with the I-405 project. I'm going to hit on a few significant issues on there. The basic issue that we are dealing on the 405 project is the right-of-way agreements with the Getty, right-of-way agreements with the VA property.
About the off-ramps at Sunset. That's just...
Right-of-way is the major issue, and we have these giant bureaucracies and agencies that we are dealing with. And Caltrans has been working with us very closely to help us out and get the agreements done. So that's the critical one.
Is that true, Mike? We working together?
Other than that, I think the rest of the project is moving along fairly well. We do have issues about closures and all that. We are trying to work with the local communities. We give them advance noting. We go to community meetings. We keep them informed through various media and social outlets. We still get some complaints here and there. But we are working on it.
Just a few? Yeah. You want to sit in our office for a while?
Murthy, isn't there an issue with a water pipeline on the 405 somewhere?
Is that the one with the MWD?
Mike and I were just talking about it. Maybe we should alert the committee to this.
That's the 405 chain.
Yeah, there's a 96-inch water line that if we don't realign the freeway, we would have to relocate that 96-inch water line. So we've been working with and negotiating with the Getty Museum and with Metro staff to encroach into the Getty Museum property so that we could not 96-inch water line. And there's an additional cost associated with the mitigation negotiations that we've done with the Getty.
Item 46, we will be making a presentation on that.
Okay.
The next one is the island line. It's coming along well. We are on schedule. We do have some coordination issues with the various third parties, but we are working them out.
Can you give us an example of those coordination issues?
DWP, for example, is the one that we are working with. They have limited number of crews that they can allocate to any one of the projects. We have three major projects going on simultaneously, and also, of course, the exposition work. So they have to distribute the crews among all of these projects. And whenever they get an emergency, they pull them out of these projects. So we have some issues there. And we have been meeting with them regularly, and the mayor's office have been coordinating assignment of these crews and some dedicated people to these projects.
Okay.
The next one is the congestion reduction demonstration project. The contractor is on schedule. He has completed over 80% of the design, and we are also working with, again, this is a project where we have to work with Caltrans. They have the road widening part of the project, and we are doing the signage and the systems installation, so we work very closely. Coming along fairly well. We are on schedule as of today. Universal City Station Pedestrian Bridge. When I prepared this slide, I know Supervisor Molina had asked this question before. Where are we with the Universal? As of late last night, around 5:30 or so, we got their revised marked-up agreement. I have not seen it. Our legal people have it. They're taking a look at it. The indications are they seem to agree with most of what we had proposed. And as soon as we have that finalized, we will get that to the committee and the board. Crenshaw LAX, this project is on schedule. Yesterday we came to the planning and programming for approval of the budget, life of project budget, which got approved. So we are moving ahead with it. We are also still working with the industry review comments. We did go to the industry asking their opinion about the contract sizing and the terms and conditions that we have. We have received many comments, and we are working with our procurement and legal, trying to identify what can be accommodated in our documents. So we are progressing well. Regional connector. We are under the preliminary engineering program at this point. We have completed the geotech work. Value engineering recommendations have been implemented. We still have certain issues associated with the alignment, which we are working with our operations, trying to resolve those issues before we move to the next step. West Side Subway, the FTA comments on our admin documents, EIS documents, are received. We are working on those comments. We are also working with FTA and the State Historic Preservation Group to get their concurrence. Preliminary engineering is continuing. We have an item on agenda today for continuation of the preliminary engineering in support of the full funding grant application. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
And any questions? Okay, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Murthy, can you give me a brief recap of the Orange Line again and your projected completion date?
Completion date for the Orange Line is July of 2012. Currently, we are on schedule. We are trying to see if we can get that a little bit earlier than that. So we still have some issues and hurdles to cross with the various third parties. We have construction going on as rapidly as it can go. And we have some issues with the city of LA at the intersections, which we are trying to resolve through mayor's office.
The bridge on Lassen, is that complete yet?
Bridge on Lassen is pretty much complete, except for the south end of the bridge, which will be completed soon.
And do you recall how many parking spaces we have available for the park and rides at the various stations? The new segment, not the existing ones that we currently have, but
I don't often know the number, but I'll get back to you, sir, this afternoon with the exact number.
Yeah.
The questions? Okay. Next.
Good morning. I'm Brian Boudreau, the Executive Director of Program Management. We have a brief presentation we'd like to make this morning in response to some questions that were raised at last month's committee meeting regarding the process that Metro goes through to establish our project budget, how that relates to our contingency management. First of all, I wanted to give you an overview of how these budgets are constructed in a general sense. This is kind of a composite of a typical construction project budget, which we break into basically two categories, the hard cost and the soft costs. Hard cost being the cost that most people attribute with the actual construction activity being about 65% on average. And then the other 35% falls into what we call the soft cost category, which includes construction management, project administration, and contingency funds. Oops, wrong one. Okay, what makes up the project construction costs, the hard costs? Those are the facilities, the stations, track systems, depending, you know, in the case of a rail project. Of course, there's other types of elements that go into it for other non-transportation projects. But this is a representative example of the types of costs you can expect to see in the construction category, the 65%. Under construction management, which is about 5% on average, we have field oversight, inspection, testing, conformance reviews, responding to requests for information and changes, and schedule reviews. Next category is design costs, which average about 10%. This is, of course, the design costs themselves, the final design, preliminary engineering, geotechnical work, environmental review, and design support during construction. Staff admin costs, which also we refer to project management costs, average about 5%. And that includes oversight, in our case, of Metro staff of the projects themselves, as well as support we get from consultants in these areas, in the areas of engineering oversight, safety, quality, project controls, audit, ADA compliance, and the like. The last category is contingency, which averages about 15% for a composite project. And, of course, this varies greatly depending on how far along these projects are, whether it's at a very early stage where we have a higher level of contingency versus actually during the construction phase where the contingency is much less. And this is it working okay? Okay. This would cover unforeseen conditions, soil, water contamination, any volatility in commodity prices, issues we have with third parties, betterment requests, scope additions, issues with right-of-way, and other types of changes that might occur during the life of these projects. We wanted to give you a little idea of what the industry standards were in terms of a contingency and how we came up with our own standards. And it'll range between 10 and 35%, depending on where these projects are, and also on the conditions at a particular project. Obviously, underground construction has much greater risk than above-ground construction in many cases. The type of project, how much design is required, the delivery method, design build versus other types of methods that are out there. And then also we go through a risk assessment process for some of the larger projects, so that's going to dictate to a large extent how much contingency we're going to recommend for a given project.
Do they have a handout for this?
These are some of a representative industry standards that are out there right now for contingency.
Excuse me, do you have a handout on this?
Yes. I'm sorry if you didn't receive one. We provided one earlier. The metro for contingency ranges from 10 to 35% depending on the timing of the project. Once we enter into preliminary engineering, it'll be in the 25 to 35% range. At the award of a construction or design build construction contract, that would be 10 to 15%. Compare that to the Federal Transit Administration standards, of which much of our policies and procedures actually are dictated by the FTA. They have a 10% recommendation at contract award for a design bid build project, that way we do final design. And then the design build projects, they recommend between 8 and 10% because some of that risk is transferred over to the contractor and designers. The Federal Highway Administration has a similar standard in terms of during the PE phase, they're looking at a 25 to 30% range. And then at contract award, between 5 to 15%. And then the U.S. Department of Energy, during conceptual planning, they use 20 to 30%. At the close of PE, 15 to 25%. And then at contract award, similar to FHWA, they use between 5 and 15%. So that concludes my presentation. be happy to answer them.
I have some questions, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I don't know if I saw a place where you had labor costs as a contingency. Did you have that, or was that an omission? The labor as a function of your contingency. I saw materials, but did I miss the labor piece?
Well, just let me answer that question rather than looking at the exhibit. The contingency includes labor costs as well as material costs. Capture any possible increase in the project, which would include potential labor increases as well.
So it's in which part of this, though?
I would say, well, it depends on which type of labor you're speaking to. As far as metro labor, that would be covered under the staff admin costs. We have a 5% allowance for those types of costs. If, in fact, that cost is above or below that amount, that assumed level, then contingency would be affected by that. In the case of the contractor where they're proposing a fixed bid on a project, if their labor costs go up, then obviously that's not our responsibility. That would be the responsibility of the contractor themselves.
Right. And under the ones that you show as industry contingency standards in that category or that slide, you have, I think it's Federal Highway. Is that, where does sound walls come in at that?
Sound walls would fall into the FHWA category because we're required to follow the FHWA process on those types of projects.
So if we see, as in reality, that our contingencies are exceeding these ranges here, what would you recommend we do?
What we do is we have what's known as a trending process that we go through on a regular basis where we look at all the costs on a given project and see which direction they're heading. And to the extent that we feel that there's a reason to make adjustments to the contingency, we'll actually put together a request and discuss it with the project manager and make a decision whether it would be appropriate to transfer dollars from the construction allowance and move it into the specific line items where the additional funds are required. So we have actually have policies and process that we follow specifically to cover those types of issues.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank you for following up and putting this in writing and giving us some systematic way to look at how our contracts are let out and whether the contingency ranges are within the scope of what the national standards are and what other standards that we may be using. Let me just go back through one of the slides here, if you give me a moment, please. Has anyone gone through the projects that we have underway, the ones that we've this board has approved, and actually measured, compared whether the contingency ranges that you are suggesting are the ones that are appropriate for the industry standards to what is actually happening with our projects?
Yes, you're speaking to them, to him or his group. That's a responsibility of the program management group, is to go through that very process.
Mm-hmm.
And we do individual risk assessments on each project to look at what will be an appropriate contingency level. We also factor in our recent experience on various projects that are similar. So that all becomes part of the process of deciding what's an appropriate level of contingency for each project.
And is, based on your memory, could you say whether we are within those limits on all our projects or not, or are there some that are approaching or have gone beyond what you're recommending are the standards here?
In general, most of our projects fall within these categories. And matter of fact, we've had some instances where we've actually underrun projects in the case of the Orange Line, the original Orange Line. And going into construction on these projects, we try to adhere to those percentages as much as possible. And sometimes they may be extenuating circumstances which prevent an exact adherence to that process. To give you an example, on the Eastside project, which was done within budget and within schedule, funding constraints dictated that we only had enough money to have a certain level of contingency. So we had to manage that project very, very carefully to stay within the amount of funds that were available for that project. So fortunately, we were successful in that case. But generally speaking, we aspire to these types of standards, not just for our own purposes, but a lot of the funding agencies require that we have these standards as well.
At some point, yes.
Just to maybe tie that into the board policy on project management as regards budget, specifically as regards Measure R program. Measure R allocates so much money to each project. If we overrun the Measure R budget on the early on projects, because there's only so much money, we've in effect defunded a subsequent project, which nobody wants to have that happen. So therefore, the board has established a policy where at 3 points in the life of the project, early phases, We have to come to the board and prove that we have a budget which can be delivered within that Measure R allocation. The contingency is part of that. Part of what we're afraid of is, let's say we fund a project and it gets 95% done, but all the money's been spent. Well, in effect, we have to completely fund that project because we can't let the 95% investment sit there. So, in effect, that overrun now goes back to defunding somebody else's project. If you're a project advocate, what you might want to do is to take the contingency and put it into the baseline budget, build a project which has certain enhancements, get it 95% done, then there's a fait accompli, MTA has to fund it. So this discussion on contingency ties into that goal of delivering the project on budget, the point being to have a sufficient contingency so that we don't overrun the budget and defund somebody else.
Thank you. So let me go back to what I was asking. On the projects that we have, you said for the most part we're staying within those limits, those guidelines, and you've looked at all the projects to determine whether we have or have not stayed within those guidelines, correct?
Those projects that are sufficiently defined, like in the case of the Measure R program, some projects have progressed to a point where you can make that kind of analysis. For instance, the Regional Connector West Side, Crenshaw, there's enough information to make that kind of analysis. On those projects that aren't yet well defined, those other Measure R projects that are still going through the preliminary planning process, we really don't have a solid budget to build upon yet, so we haven't gone to that process on those projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other question? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I'm up for the next one, too. This is our monthly assessment of the project budget and schedule status from the program management group. And also I have the Foothill and the Expo authorities that are here with me that will address projects at the appropriate time. First of all, this is an overview of the projects we're going to be discussing this morning. There's 13 projects in there, of which four of them are either in the final design or the construction phase. Another three of them are going through the preliminary engineering phase, and then the remainder of them are going through various levels of advanced planning and alternatives analysis. And by the way, this schedule assumes, these schedules we've outlined assume that America Fast Forward funding would be available to accelerate these projects, so I just wanted to point that out. First project is the Orange Line extension. From a budgeting standpoint, Orange Line is doing very well, to the extent that we're in a position now where we feel we may underrun this project by the time it's complete, showing a forecast of $180 million versus the current budget of $215.6 million. So in the time, we'll bring this project to the board as necessary to reflect any savings that this project might come down with. And then from a schedule standpoint, as Mr. Murthy mentioned earlier, we're still shooting for July of 2012 for revenue operations date. Discussions about whether it would be possible to accelerate that. But we do have some risks, of course, associated with the work at the intersections and getting the Department of Water and Power approvals.
The Metro.
Questions on the Orange Line?
Any question?
Yes. And we would either.
Thank you.
Next project is the Crenshaw LAX project. As you may know, at yesterday's Planning and Programming Committee, there was an action taken to actually increase this project budget from its previous amount of $1.715 billion to $1.749. So in future reports, you'll see the $1.749 being shown as the current approved project budget for this project. Schedule-wise, we're still anticipating project by the end of 2018 calendar year. We're in the process right now of putting together the request for qualifications for release later this year, and then requesting actual proposals from the proposers in early 2012. There's still some risks, of course, to the project that need to be mitigated. The funding shortfall to some extent has been mitigated by this action to bring some more dollars to the project, but of course, if in fact we're successful at adding in additional stations, that would have to be dealt with as well. And then the BNSF agreement will be coming back to the board in the near future, and hopefully that risk will be mitigated as well. And then, as in all of our projects, we have potential risk with right-of-way acquisition and how that impacts progression of the project. Next project's West Side Subway Extension. There's been no change on either the budget or the schedule for this project since our last report. Budget's at $5.34 billion. And the revenue operations date projected of 2022. As far as significant activity, we've submitted an application to the Federal Transit Administration for New Starts funds for the project, and we're in the process of answering questions from them so that we can move forward towards getting their approval to enter into final design and hopefully getting a full funding grant agreement for this project in a timely manner. The risks, of course, relate to station locations, including some of the discussions yesterday regarding the Century City Station. And then also always a risk is working through the federal New Start process, which is quite complex and a lot of different requirements. So we're hoping that we can get their approval to enter into final design on this project by the middle of next year. Likewise, on the regional connector, there's been no change on either the budget or the schedule for this project. The budget's 1367. Revenue operations date is still planned for 2019. And likewise, we've submitted a New Start application for this project to FTA, and they're reviewing it, and we're answering questions as appropriate. And the goal in this one is to receive a record of decision from FTA in January 2012. And enter into final design in mid-2012, similar to the West Side extension.
Sir.
The record of decision, is there anything that we need to do that we have not done that would slow down the process for the FTA to give us that record of decision?
My knowledge, there's no action that Metro staff should be taking at this point in time that they're not already taking in order to meet
that. Thank you. Mr. Chair,
yes.
I met with the FTA administrator twice in the past 3 weeks, and I'm happy to report that they have undertaken to accelerate their work. They're working with us at a very rapid pace at our request, and they're really performing extraordinarily a high level of partnership with us, and they're excited about these projects.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to go on to the construction authorities, beginning with the Foothill Extension. From a budgeting standpoint, as we mentioned at the last month's meeting, we're making a recommendation that we add additional contingency dollars to the project to bring it up to a 10% level, which would bring it from the current $735 million to $764.5 million. So at some point in the future, we'll be bringing an item to the board to officially make that action if the construction authority concurs with that recommendation. Then schedule-wise, the only concern that I would have that I think you're aware of is that there's some litigation out there right now that's preventing them from acquiring the land for the maintenance facility. Fortunately, the planning committee yesterday approved an item that would allow them to move forward in a way that would hopefully not impact the project schedule. Chris Berner is here. He's the project director for the Foothill Extension, and he'll be doing a brief report on the current activities on the project.
Good morning. I won't discuss the first bullet. Brian just discussed that. There is a CEQA challenge of our SEIR that added the maintenance facility to the project. There is a court hearing next Wednesday. We expect a decision in that case, and we are hopeful that we will be victorious. The I-210 bridge construction is going along very well. The large diameter pile foundations, there are three of them. They've been completed. They have begun the foundation work for the abutments. They are completing the first abutment today. They will begin working on the other abutment probably early next week. The design builder is reporting a 23-day delay. However, that delay will in no way impact the overall program schedule because there's a five-and-a-half-month float period between the completion of that contract and when we turn it over to the follow-on contractor. We need to obtain four permits for the San Gabriel River Bridge and a few other bridge replacements throughout the project. We have obtained one of those permits, and we are very hopeful to obtain two more within the next 2 weeks. So that completes the presentation, unless there are any questions.
Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Next project I'd like to cover is Exposition Phase 1. As discussed last month and in previous discussions, we do have some budget issues to deal with on the project. Currently, we're reflecting a projected increase of about $2.8 million to the project, which still does not include some of the claims and unknowns that are out there that need to be quantified. The Construction Authority has...
I thought we'd narrow those down. How far off are we on the knowing what those claims are?
Well, at this point in time, we have no claims submitted by our contractor. There are issues out there that are still unresolved that could result in claims, but at this point in time...
At the high end, what would that be?
Well, I would suggest maybe a closed session item because of the potential litigation with our contractor.
Right, you got it. I understand.
Yes.
And then schedule-wise... they're still trying to get the initial segment to La Cienega opened up by December of 2011. That could slip until January 2012, depending on how the testing goes. With that, I'll turn it over to Eric, who's the project director for Expo Phase 1, to go through some more activities and also to discuss some information asked for previously.
On the project, our contractor still has not reached substantial completion. Our independent assessment is that that will occur sometime mid to late next month. We are working closely with Metro Operations and the contractor to focus on those testing activities that would allow Metro to get their operators on the alignment to begin their training. We are now in the process of completing those tests, and we anticipate having Metro on the alignment from 23rd Street to La Cienega sometime next week if the testing continues to go as it has been. So if we're able to do that, we'll have to see how the training and the pre-revenue operations go. We're still shooting for a December, January rod date, but again, that'll be up to Metro as far as when that takes place. Opening would be to La Cienega. There's still elements of work in Culver City as well as the Farmdale Station that need to be completed. So we anticipate those being completed sometime basically the spring of 2012. As Brian mentioned on the budget, we're currently forecasting a $2.8 million shortfall. But we are continuing to pursue third-party reimbursable costs, which we have at about $4 million, and then other potential savings that we're looking for out there as part of the project for another $1 billion. At the last board meeting, it was asked to summarize the life of project budget increases. We've tried to do this here working with Metro staff. The original budget approved by Metro and transferred to the authority was $640 million. In September of 2007, the board authorized an additional $23.3 million to include the Expo Park USC station to do improvements to the Blue Line Junction, and then also to fund crossing modifications in front of LA Trade Tech that were requested by the California Public Utilities Commission. In November of 2007, the Metro Board authorized a $145 million increase to the life of project budget. This was attributable to basically unprecedented increases in the escalation for materials. The FEIS budget included about 3 to 4% per year for escalation. The actual escalation rate during that period was actually over 11%, so there were additional costs associated with that, as well as there were additional elements of scope that were more defined as the design was advanced from the preliminary engineering level through final design. This also included a 3% contingency that was added to the project. In April of 2008, the board authorized $54.1 million for adding the Culver City aerial station. That was originally supposed to be part of Phase 2, and Phase 1 was going to build an interim at-grade station. The Metro was able to identify state money that was able to be used for this, so the project was, or the station was incorporated into the project. In July of 2010, the Metro Board authorized $36.6 million for safety enhancements requested by CPUC and Metro. This included the station at Farmdale Avenue, as well as several other improved features, including automatic train protection at the junction. In December of 2010, the board authorized $28.5 million for a settlement agreement with our design-build contractor for outstanding claims. In February of 2011, the city of Culver City provided $3.1 million in funding to cover the costs associated with modifications to the Culver City station foundations that would allow the city to come back in the future and build subterranean parking at a joint development site that they had identified. In April 2011, the city of LA was able to provide $1.4 million in additional funding to add second entrances at the 23rd Street Station and the Pico Station. As I mentioned previously, we are still currently forecasting a $2.8 million budget shortfall, but we do continue to work our reimbursements and other savings, which now are estimated at $3.8 million. So if we're able to realize all these savings, we're looking at a balanced budget. But again, it doesn't include claims or other risks that are not known at this time. And that concludes my budget summary recap.
I do.
Yeah. Wilson?
I'm not sure who's best to answer this question, but given what I heard earlier from Mr. Boudreau about how we look at contingencies and how we keep on track with whether we're on in the ranges or not, what happened in this project? I mean, most of this was done long before I got here, so I'm just kind of get a brief. Did we know that these things were happening when they were happening, or did we find out after they already happened?
Well, I mean, as part of the process, as far as, you know, when these issues came up, we did work with Metro staff and the Metro board to identify the increases in scope and the increases in costs and talk to them about what they were. There were, you know, options as far as shortening the project versus looking for additional funding. Obviously, again, the contingency in the original budget didn't account for certainly some of the escalation changes that we ended up realizing. Again, we've worked with Metro and the Metro board as we've gone through this process.
Okay, so I don't want to belabor this, but perhaps what we could do is be interesting to see lessons learned from this particular project, to see what we did and when we did it, and if the systems that we were relying on really worked or not. Is there a way for us to get that at some future date so that we can go back to see? I mean, I appreciate you putting all this in the timelines that you did, and this is not a beat up. I'm not trying to beat you up. I'm just trying to get an understanding of how this worked and whether it was a reliable system or not, because we're basing all the other projects on what you shared with me earlier in your previous report, right?
Yeah.
If I could.
Obviously now we're providing a lot more oversight on these projects on the construction authorities. Previously, they weren't required to adhere to our policies and procedures in terms of how things like contingency are handled. In phase two of this project, they have made those adjustments. They have incorporated some of the lessons learned from phase one. So based on my observation, at least, I think they've taken that into account, and we can certainly try to articulate that
Yeah, and really I'm not trying to set apart the authorities from what Metro does, because we have our own issues too. So what I'm more interested in is really whether it's an authority that's responsible for it or whether Metro is directly responsible for it. I'd just like to know, did the system work? And if not, where did we go wrong, and how can we learn from what we did in the past so that we don't repeat those same kinds of mistakes?
Yeah, we can work to put that together. I think we have taken some steps, and we continue also to evaluate lessons learned to incorporate into phase two.
How long do you think it'll take you to get something back, just so I can get a brief summary on how this all worked?
If you like, we can make a presentation at the next committee or even prior to that if you'd like to have it sooner.
It's up to the chair as far as the committee. I can't schedule committee stuff, but...
What's that?
I asked him if he could get us a report on the lessons learned, and he says he can do it at the next committee or he can do it prior to that time. So,
I think the committee would be okay. If not, at least get us the information.
Right.
Well, we can do it at the next committee.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Expo Phase 2, which we mentioned a little bit previously. This project had a groundbreaking in September, so it's already moving forward with their design build contract. At this point in time, the budget's $1.5 billion. We have no reason to believe at this point that that's not adequate. They've got about a 12% contingency moving forward. So, as I mentioned, I think the lessons learned been applied due to the experiences on Phase 1. And then from a scheduling standpoint, they're forecasting 2015 for their revenue operations date. And based on our initial review, we feel that's reasonable. So more of a positive finding on this phase of the project. And, of course, there's still some risks that remain out there on the project. And at this point, I'll hand it over to Eric so he can go through some of those areas.
Some of the activities and issues Brian mentioned, we did hold our groundbreaking event on September 12th. Last month, so things are moving forward. We issued an LNTP to our Phase 2 design-build contractor, and he's well underway with his field activities and design. We've executed a contract with Maintenance Design Group to do the maintenance facility in Santa Monica. We're doing that as a design bid build project to make sure we're able to incorporate all the community concerns and functional concerns as part of this before it goes out to bid. We have limited notice proceed for our engineering construction management services consultant, URS, so they'll be assisting our staff. The expo staff is about 15 people, so we count on our consultant support to help us manage the projects. So with that, that's basically a summarized phase two.
Question on phase two? All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Next.
Pardon?
Okay, we're going to bring up little thing here. Mr.
Slide.
Miles is going to give us a little report on the I-5.
Hey, good morning.
Ooh, ouch. We got another meeting at noon, so we got to keep it moving.
Quickly is what you're saying.
No, I just, this report we've been waiting for 20 years. this is a biggie.
Okay.
Huh? That's true.
I talked this morning about the I-5 widening from the Orange County line to the 605. Hit the slide. Down at the bottom, there's like a little slideshow thing. Nope, over. One more. That one. Okay, this slide shows all five segments of the I-5 project. Segments 1, 3, and 4 are the segments that have CMIA funding involved in them, and that's the bond money. And they have a definite deadline on when that money has to be obligated by. So those are the segments that we're focusing on currently. And as you can see that from the schedule, is segment one is completed and has been certified and will go to award in November next month. Segments three and four are on target to meet our funding schedule. And of that, we have 233 parcels in segment three and four that we anticipate needing 3 to 6 resolutions of necessity with the CTC. That will be 1 residential and 2 commercial segments. And of that, we anticipate a small handful may go to court. That will not delay the project because we will we're requested from FHWA workarounds so that we continue the project without actually owning the property yet, and we have agreements to do that after the resolution of necessity is passed by the California Transportation Commission. Next slide. So of the 233 parcels that are on segment 3 and 4 of the CMIA-funded segments, 204 of them are residential properties, 18 are commercial, and 11 others, and the 11 others are railroads and governmental type facilities. And so we are working with those individuals to acquire that property. Next slide. Segment 3, which is the next segment, there's 45 parcels, 8 of them, or 38 of them are residential and 7 commercial. We have completed 41 appraisals on those properties. We still need to acquire 16 properties, and there are 5 contaminated parcels in that segment that we're working on.
Are the 5 including the 16?
Yes.
Okay.
So we are working, and they're all commercial properties, 5 contaminated. So we are working Segment 4, there's 188 total parcels that are required for the project. We've completed appraisals on 172 of them. Again, we have 92 to acquire. This shows a total of the properties that we have, and this is the relocation assistance program. We are working with the residents that we will be locating out of their residential homes to relocate them, and as you can see from the slide, there's 4 on segment 1 that still need to be done, 3 on segment 3, and then the 22 on segment 4. One thing that I would like to talk to you about on segment 4 is because of the bond issue and the fact that the funds have to be obligated by August, we are working with Metro staff and CTC staff to develop a plan B, so to speak, and to swap funds, $167 million of the CIMA-funded with local funded projects, and we would move the CMIA funds to the I-5 North, Burbank, and Empire, and the I-10 HOV project, and then we would take the local funds and put them back into Segment 4 to complete that project.
Segment 4 is... the Valley View piece?
Yes. So the next slide shows the timeline that we have to do this in. If in fact, we do need to go to a Plan B, we are not planning on going to a Plan B. We're putting a full press court on to make sure that we meet the deadlines for the funding. But if we do, we've notified, this is my notification to the board today about the existence of a Plan B. And again, it has not been finalized. We have not vetted it through the CTC, and final details will have to come to the board before we can proceed to the CTC. But we would have a presentation to you in 3/29 meeting. You guys could make a decision on the Plan B, and then we on April 6th we would have to have a drop dead decision. In summary, we have 92% of our appraisals completed. We have 87% of the first offers done. We're on track to meet the CIMA funding, and we're working towards developing a more complete Plan B in case we need to implement that. So with that, I'll ask if there's any questions.
Oh, yeah. Hey, any questions? I just... appreciate the effort. I sit here, the assistance I can give, push, pull, or shove. Been a long time coming, so.
We've been getting a lot of help from a lot of different people. We've had some challenges with our right-of-way Maine. We've worked with CTC staff, and we've had all of the cases moved to Long Beach, and they've dedicated a court to Maine cases for us. We've also had some issues with Edison, and we're working with high-level people at Edison now to make sure that we can
get the utility. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. I think that takes us to item 44. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Item 44 is an old report on the Metro Green Construction Policy. Just give you an update.
That's a brief update, right?
Yes, sir. Very, very brief.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that we had a very successful outreach in the last few months. These are the activities that we have looked at, and I'll go through the slides really quickly on what each of these activities had entailed. As far as our specs and procurement are concerned, we are updating our metro design criteria. We have some draft specs that we have developed and are incorporating these into our procurement templates. And we plan to complete all these efforts by the end of this year. And at the same time, we're reaching out to our Measure R projects and capital projects for implementation of this policy. We also looked at the various programs and funds that may be affected by this policy. Staff has determined in consultation with other staff members that Metrolink projects are not affected. Federal and state pass-through grants are not affected by this policy. At the same time, we clarified that the call for projects funding, only projects are approved after September 22nd, will be affected by this policy. And at the same time, as far as local return monies or local return projects are concerned, this is still being analyzed by staff if it's going to be affected by this policy. We have we had our first technical working group meeting on October 13th. And this technical working group essentially consists of all different representatives from all across LA County. We have emphasized with that group that we're here to collaborate and understand the issues for regional implementation of this policy, and that Metro is working as a partner, as a technical resource with them. At the end of that meeting, essentially our representatives from across the county essentially said and told us that they would like to consult with their stakeholders as well as their contractors as far as the implementation of this policy within their regions. We are also working with the South Coast Air Quality Management District as well as the Air Resources Board on training staff on the implementation of this policy. Different types of training include awareness training, workshops, as well as enforcement training for Metro staff. And then finally, we did an outreach to all these different groups and committees in the last couple of months, and we have a few more outreach meetings that we have scheduled in the next few months. And on the right there of your screen is a flyer that we have brought with us to these different meetings that we have been presenting information for. So with that, I welcome any questions.
Thank you. And you're continuing your close working relationship with the various local governments too, right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. All right. I'm sorry.
I'd like to ask Mr. Miles, can you tell us where Caltrain is at on this this policy? Have we gotten full support and approval through all the, I guess, governing bodies that you have to go through?
Which policy is that?
The green policy, green construction.
We have a green policy at Caltrans, and we have reviewed your policy, and we will be working with you to implement your policy on using the green equipment.
Do you see any foresee any problems with a conflict between the policy that this board has and the policy that Caltrans has that with respect to green construction?
There's some differences in the level or the degree to which, you know, the green policy at Metro requires versus what the Caltrans policy requires. We worked a lot with small businesses and others to develop our green policy because there's some concern amongst the construction industry that if we went to a real hard line on green vehicles and things like that, that it would affect their ability to be able to bid on our projects.
That's the same issue with the local governments. that are having, too, Mel.
A good example would be street sweepers. You require an alternate fuel vehicle for street sweepers, and a lot of the street sweeping companies that we contract with don't have those type of vehicles. They're running diesel vehicles, and a lot of the small businesses can't afford to go out and buy the new sweeper, so essentially they will not be able to bid on some of our street sweeping contracts. So that would be the things that we're looking at.
When do you expect that we'll get reconciled all those differences?
I don't know exactly. I mean, we have a policy. You have a policy. Meld them together and make sure that we can meet your objectives with the projects that you're funding, and then we need to meet the objectives we set with our projects. And when you have a mixing of money like that, it becomes a little more challenging.
Same battle we have with the cities.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, next
yes, sir.
Item 45.
Yes, sir. I just want to make a brief statement on 45 and 46 both, and then hand over to Mr. Mike Barber, project director for the I-405 project. I-405 is the design-build project. The designers are City of L.A. and Caltrans. MTA's role is to administer the contract and implement the documents as designed, number one. Number two, this being a design-build project, there are a lot of concurrent activities going on while the design is in progress. So we have to make some decisions in the field to keep the project going so that we do not lose the momentum and pay the delay cost to the contractor. And number three, the two changes that we are requesting approval are within the life of project budget costs, and we are seeking for contract modifications on these two. With that, Mr. Mike Barber has a detailed presentation on both of them. Either we can make the presentation or answer any questions you might have.
Okay, go ahead.
You want to go ahead with the...
I don't know if you want to go through a presentation or not today. I'd like to start off by both items today, 45 and 46.
Okay, go ahead. The issue here is whether we have the report or not, because there may be a conflict. We understand it's a salt conflict, so we can go ahead and make the presentation. I have the same thing in 46, 7, I mean. Hey, go ahead, sir. Sorry.
I'd like to point out that the two board actions that we bring today, 45 and 46, are really great, significant changes for the project. Both benefit local traffic and also the freeway traffic, as well as reduce congestion in the temporary and also in the long term. So we really feel very confident these are significant, positive changes for the project. To begin with, on number 45, this is one that's up on the screen right now. This gives a location. Essentially, the location is on Wilshire and Sepulveda. This change started out. The county did not comment on the alignment and the changes at this or the improvements at this location. When we completed our design, we sent it to the county. The county commented and said that they would like some improvements. And basically, that improvement on this particular area is a turn pocket underneath two ramp bridges just north of the Wilshire interchange. This change, after we've got through looking at it with the county, we agreed with them that this is a significant change. And if we did not implement it now, this change would lock in this interchange with a bad configuration for the next basically 100 years. The unfortunate part about it is our design was complete, so we had to go through a process of getting the design changed, and this is where our initial estimate was around $800,000. We went through our normal change process, but after we completed our estimates of the design, after we'd already started the work, we found out we were over $1 million. So that was a reason to come back and ask for justification today for not only the change, but also for the ratification.
Okay. Chair would move the recommendation. Are there any questions before we?
Yeah, I'll second it. How did that happen, given what I was told two reports ago?
I'm sorry, sir?
How did it happen? How did it occur that you have from 800,000, is that what you said?
Yes.
To what you're asking for now, what caused that to happen? You said, unfortunately, but I don't understand what that means.
I think, unfortunately, is that we had to come back and go through the process of going through the board process to get this approved. Initially, our design, we were doing two bridges that we had to lengthen, completely redesign. But it turned out not only did we have to redesign those two bridges, there was also an impact on a third bridge, which shared a common, basically a footing adjacent to it. So that's the reason it went over the 800,000.
Okay. Okay. So you ran into that in post-design or pre-design?
Basically, there were about, I think, at 100% plans when the county commented on these plans. It was about, the 100% stage. So that's what required a complete redesign.
Okay. So we'll throw the county under the bus. Good.
So the county's paying for this?
Yeah, as soon as the...
apparently negotiating with the county.
The city pays for Universal Studios. No.
Hey, Universal's in the county.
Yeah.
In the city.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any objections? So ordered. All right.
Next.
46. 40. We did 45 and 46?
46 is you're going to make a brief presentation on that. Go ahead.
We talked a little bit on 45. There are mainly local benefits. On 46, it's a completely different issue here. The project initially was required to relocate a 96-inch water line, high-pressure water line, underneath Sepulveda in front of the Getty. This line is a very old line, and there's a significant risk to the project because of even relocating in our breakage. An example would be Getty was very concerned about their seven-story parking structure because this would be flooded out in this area. In addition to that, there's a significant risk to our contractor and our schedule because of the pipe itself, the procurement of the materials, and also the cutover. In other words, we have to shut down this 96-inch only at a certain time of year. And if we miss those dates, the risk of a schedule delay was over a year. The contractor came to us with a VE quite some time ago to move the freeway to the west. We didn't go with their VE because there's some provisional sums are involved with this change. So we went to Caltrans and Getty with this proposal. Both Caltrans and Getty saw other things that they would like in addition to this relocation of the pipe would benefit them. Essentially, Caltrans and Getty have not resolved some of their right-of-way issues on the west side of the 405 in this area, and this has been going on for some time. So through this negotiation and an agreement with both Getty and Caltrans, in addition to not relocating this pipe, now we've developed an option for Caltrans to put a fifth lane in from the Getty on-ramp, which is just north of Getty, all the way to the 10. So essentially, for this $10.5 million, now we get to improve this freeway. In addition to that, we also, during the construction stage, the Sepulveda would also have to been realigned on the original alignment. In addition to that, there was also some walls and whatnot that had to be put in. Those impacts during construction were significant. We have lots of problems with traffic right now in Sepulveda because of construction. The realignment of this utility plus about four others would have impacted this area for almost 18 months. And there is a lot of positive things that came out of this change. The reason we're coming back for a ratification is we, at the time when we administered this thing, as Murthy said earlier, we had a schedule concern. Early in the year, we looked at it, and this one wall was on a critical path, and we need to get it started. We thought we had, we do have, existing funds from the change. In other words, there was work that was being deleted. That work we thought we could use to fund this change. Turns out we should have gone back to the board at that time, but, you know, we made a mistake, and this is why we're here, to do this ratification. In addition to that, we are also asking today, too, for authorization for an FTE. One of the problems we have on the job is that we don't have enough highway construction management experience for Metro. We're using Caltrans, but we've lost basically three or four of our key people, and we'd also like to come back and get approval for that, too.
Okay. Are there?
I'd like to comment on that position. As with all positions that we are now requesting for capital positions, where the proposal is to fund the position out of the project budget, and when the project is concluded, then the position will be lapsed. That is, it will be discontinued.
Yeah, that's going to be a question I asked just to get it on the record. Is that's the way I understood it after my.
That's correct. Yes.
Are there any other questions? And I just, from a, you know, the issue with the pipe and the oldness of the pipe, I mean, even what we're doing, is that going to present potential problems there?
If we kept on our current alignment? Or
No, not on the current, but even with the new one. I mean, are we still?
No, the alignment misses it by, I think the closest it gets to it right now is 8 foot. A retaining wall gets within like 8 feet of that. We've already gone through with MWD to determine if that was acceptable. We had to do some analysis to show that it was acceptable.
Right, and you put cameras inside and all that kind of stuff?
There initially is all analysis. We do some pretty high-tech analysis as far as how loading would be impacting this pipe. And they're very stringent on their rules, so we've succeeded in getting through that process.
I mean, it's just, you know, the issue is significant. We have slide issues in other parts of the county, and most of it based around those kinds of issues and, you know, older pipes and those kinds of things. And sometimes the extra pressure can bring a problem to bear. So I just wanted to make sure.
It is a high-pressure pipe, yes.
This is 200 PSI, and plus it's 8 foot diameter. This water would come out of this, would wash away, you know, the freeway. And this is one of the concerns of, you know, not having it.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm asking. You know, 8 feet sounds very close to me. I mean, 8 feet is not very far away, so. Okay. With that, the chair would move it. Is there a second?
Second.
Without objection, so ordered. Item 47.
Item 47, Mr. is requesting approval for the Westside contract to continue the preliminary engineering. Mr. Dennis Morey is here, the project manager. To make the presentation. Again, here, the money that we are requesting for the continuation of preliminary engineering is allocated in the long-range transportation plan, and we are also requesting additional monies to supplement what we have left over in order to continue the PE till such time we get the full funding grant application approved by FTA. Dennis will make a presentation. We'll be happy to answer any questions.
Good afternoon. Mr. Murthy has covered most of the major points in this item. I think the key thing about requesting the board's approval is that this is tied to MTA's ability to ultimately get a full funding grant agreement. There are various milestones in the FTA funding process. The FTA did approve our entry into PE in January of this year. And the next milestone, as Brian Boudreau presented, is that we want to get a record decision in the early part of next year. However, one of the steps after record decision is to get the entry into final design. We don't anticipate that until the summer of next year. So it would be very advantageous for MTA and its consultants to continue working on the Westside project. You've heard earlier presentations about utility conflicts, problems with not having properties. There are a lot of complex issues on the Westside project. This is a 9-mile project with 7 underground stations. Some of the station options that we're looking at are on the Westwood VA hospital site, the GSA federal building site that is just east of the 405 freeway. We interface with the 405 freeway. There's an entrance that is being proposed on the UCLA Lot 36 in Westwood. We have a underground station proposed in the middle of Beverly Hills in front of the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. And also we have an interface at Wilshire and Fairfax with the Page Museum, the La Brea Tar Pits, and the County Museum of Art. So during this period of time, we feel that it's very important to start working with other third parties, the government agencies, with the feds, the state, the county, and the city, to make sure that we progress the design so that there's enough details that we can work out all of these third-party issues and avoid any large risk to the project. And that is the purpose of requesting this funding.
Okay, my questions go along the line of the color of money here. I understand that. And green can be used in a number of different ways and on different projects. And this clearly is a redirect of monies, these capital project dollars coming back into the system. And I understand from some email exchange or something about there was a decision made, you know, the usual thing, the LRTP kind of a thing. And this money could be used for anything. I think it needs to be very clear in these reports that you're moving money into a Measure R project. There are a whole bunch of projects out there, and this money could be used in other areas. And I have a real concern about just sort of painting the brush and saying, well, we're going to do this to repay this, to do this, when that money clearly could be used for anything besides this project. And again, it goes into, you know, the issue of West Side, that whole thing sucking up every dollar we have. And I always want to make sure that we highlight that each and every time.
Okay.
At this particular point, I'll probably won't support doing this. Just want a real clarification on what's being jeopardized, where that money could go, what else it could be used for, what other Measure R project it could be used for.
We can give you a brief explanation. Mr. David Ailey is here right now if you want, or if you want it later, we can do that. So,
well, I don't want to hold anybody up. I mean, just as long as I get the information prior to the board meeting.
Whenever the pleasure of the committee is.
Anybody else have a concern?
I want you to kind of clarify what you're asking, because I'm not quite sure what I understand what you're saying.
Well, if you look at the item and the recommendation, it says a repayment, amending the budget to include this $15.2 million, okay? It's going to go into backfill an issue, increasing the Measure R West Side Subway extension by this amount. But the issue is where this money's, it makes it look like it's a flush deal, like you're just changing. But the real issue is that $15.2 million could be used for any other project, okay? If not, Measure R dollars, it's a repayment from the state. And it can be used, busted, it can be used for anything. And my point being, it wasn't really clear in the board letter of what was happening here. And I'm sure some of my other directors will, you know, have some concerns about it. So we need a very definitive explanation as to how this decision was made. I think I saw an email exchange to Murphy or something that says back some date, you know, I find it hard to believe that we'd all concur that any extra dollars flow into the West Side Subway. Okay. I mean, that's just an issue that I will raise at the full board meeting as well, too.
May I request, David, can you give just a 30-second response?
Well, I think the supervisor is correct that this money is very flexible. It's for that very reason that we had planned in the long-range plan to use it for the pre-construction activities on the subway, which are ineligible for Props A and C.
Well, we knew Prop A and C, they were ineligible for Prop A and C from the very beginning. I mean, that's
right.
We knew that with Measure R. So
that's why we've planned to use this flexible funding for the subway for quite some time.
Okay, well, I'm just so you know, I mean, you need to be prepared to give me information prior. I will raise the issue at the full board meeting.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Because that's...
Got that.
You know... We have the huge sucking machine that we talked about early on. Pardon me? It's the whole piece is it's a reimbursement piece as well, too. So reimbursement for.
Yeah. We can get you the full explanation before the board
meeting. Yeah, and the action that we took that says we're going to do every reimbursement dollar we get, we're going to put it into the West Side Subway extension. I'd like to see that as well, too.
I don't think I've heard them say that, Mr. Chair, dollar was going to go back to the West Side. I mean, earlier today we just talked about a couple other projects where we took money that we found, actually yesterday I think it was, we took money that was found and we put it into the Crenshaw project. And so it's not like this is the first time or the last time that this has happened. I think it's happened before. I know there's a lot of sensitivity to the West Side project, but frankly, the West Side project is probably going to be one of our most productive projects of all the projects that we have, given the ridership that's being forecast. So, but I do, you know, I am sensitive to the notion that we need to make sure everything is transparent and that we're not raiding money from one side or one project and putting it into another project and leaving that other project deficient of funds to complete. So I don't think this is a precedent-setting project. It's, I mean, this measure is not precedent-setting from what I can see, is it?
I don't believe so.
No.
We move my random.
I didn't think so. So, you know, I would recommend that we do whatever we can to help the chair get as much information as he needs on this so that we can be clear. And that way, if there's going to be a process, then we all know what the rules are in the process.
Absolutely. I mean, I think because it wasn't clear in the board letter.
Right.
It was not clear what was going on here.
Okay.
It was not clear that these capital project reimbursement dollars can be used for multiple different kinds of things. I mean, you know, if you look at the real regional system, the regional connector is probably the most critical thing that we have to do to sort of hook up everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand these dollars could be used for that as well, too. So just get me the information, but also know that I will raise it at the full board.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh, public comment.
Thank you, Brother Kanabi. I couldn't have said it better, Brother Kanabi. You know, you sound, Brother Kanabi attacking the West Side subway to the sea sounds like John Walsh. You know, something seriously wrong when Don Kanabi sounds like John Walsh. And you're absolutely right. I want to quote you, Brother Kanabi. You said any extra dollars flow into the West Side subway. You said the West Side is sucking up every dollar we have. You're right. Don, and incidentally, the BRU doesn't say anything about it because they got leaned on when they were opposing rail and were told that their money from wealthy foundations would be cut off if they said one damn word about rail or used the word racism. And they sit here and now I can't believe it. Don Kanabi is far to the left of the Bus Riders Union. It's a fact. And I want you to know, as far as ridership predictions are concerned, Mr. Wilson, the prediction for the Red Line was 300,000 weekday boardings by the year 2000. 11 years later, weekday boardings 150,000. You missed by 50%. Though you can, you know what you can do with your forecasts.
Hey, all right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Apologize for sounding like you.
How'd you wake him up?
No, sir. No, that's okay, John. I'm just kidding. All right. Okay. I'm going to abstain on the item, so it moved and seconded. Okay. One abstention and go to the committee. You go to the full board. No recommendation, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
2-0-1. Okay, public comment? Or we have another item?
CEO's report.
Huh?
CEO's report.
CEO's report?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I was in Washington the last couple of days, met with 8 congressional offices, including Congressman Blumenauer from Portland, discussed America Fast Forward, the subway, the connector, Crenshaw, the airport line, the whole low-sand and high-speed rail issues. There are a set of Crenshaw LAX Leadership Council meetings on October 22 and 29. Information is available from Patty if you need it.
Well, why don't you just have the information share with all members of the semi-productive trip?
Now?
Well, I know. You said we can check with Patty.
I was referring to the Crenshaw Leadership Council meetings when I said that.
Oh, okay.
All right. The Van Nuys Boulevard Rapid Way Project is continuing. There's a kickoff meeting out in the community on October 24, 25, and 26 in Panorama City, Pacoima, and Van Nuys. With that, I'll conclude my report. Thank you.
Good question, CEO. Thank you. Public comment? Any public comment?
John Hall.
Yes.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. I hope you know there's something called Alexa Global Rankings, the whole world's website. We are 424,955th out of the first 10 million websites on the planet Earth. That's Walsh Confidential. Google it. We get over 1.5 million a year. HollywoodHighlands.org. Everybody who's listening to me on the squawk boxes at the office, email any documents to me at Hollywood DEMS@gmail.com. And let's point out, and I wish you would contradict me if I'm wrong. Today, percentage of people, youth commuters using public transit is lower than it was 25 years ago. It is lower. So you just give me the facts and say I'm out of my mind. HollywoodHighlands.org.